The next case is 1556 Mary Vaccarello versus Smith and Newfin Richards. Mr. O'Shea.
Thank you. Mr. Marty Murphy's out in the hallway.
Well, the case has been called. He needs to be in here, so.
Let me go fetch him.
Your time is starting.
Time is started?
Your time is starting, yes. He's up, his responsibility to be here.
All right, I know that he's out in the hall.
Okay.
Go get him.
Here he comes. In addition, well, let me just say that I will reserve 3 minutes if I can for rebuttal. If it pleases the court, my name is Michael O'Shea. I represent Ms. Vaccarello in connection with this matter. And let me indicate that there are essentially two fundamental reasons why we cannot apply the learned intermediary defense to medical devices. And the first one, as I point out in my brief, is simply one of the law and the statute. The statute, 2307.76C, basically makes reference to ethical drugs, that is prescription drugs, and only prescription drugs, nothing else.
Does that language necessarily exclude medical devices?
It does, Your Honor. As a matter of fact, 2307.76C specifically uses the term ethical drug three times, not once, three times. And as we know from 2307.71D and E, ethical drug has a specific statutory definition, and ethical medical device is also specifically defined. So if one to argue that somehow the General Assembly forgot about the existence of medical devices, that argument is absolutely put to rest by a simple review of 2307.71E, which specifically defines ethical medical devices. So they thought about it at the General Assembly. They just chose not to include it in 2307.76C. Clear. In addition to the legal, and supplementing my legal argument, I'll indicate that Smith and Nephew, in connection with their arguments here, have only been able to cite to non-Ohio cases. And those cases are based upon a different common law structure that is developed from those states and a different statutory framework. So they have no legal application here. At best, they have only a potential argumentative or logical reason.
I haven't made a search for what they say is, he says is, that it's unanimous.
Well, they may claim that it's unanimous, Your Honor, but I have not been able to read each and every decision that they have pointed out to, but I know that it's not unanimous throughout the country on this issue. But I can't cite to you the cases off the top of my head. The additional reasons why the learned intermediary defense should not apply here is one of just logic and fairness, Your Honors. With a prescription drug, we have a thing called pharmacists in this country and in this state. And what pharmacists do is they provide something that the medical device manufacturers do not do, and that is information to the ultimate consumer. When you go and pick up your prescription, on that bag is always information about what this drug is all about and what it can do and what it can't do. There's always that pharmacist who can even get the call from the doctor that I'm prescribing this. That pharmacist knows, no, wait a minute, this is not the right thing to do, and I'm going to put this particular person on notice about what
counsel,
it is.
So if you're talking about fairness, I mean, fairness is a two-way street. How in the world is somebody who makes a medical device, and a lot of medical devices are used by prescription, let me start backwards. If a medical device is used by prescription, the doctor gives you a prescription to go to a pharmacy and get the medical device. It's not a drug. Does the learned intermediary apply there?
It depends, Your Honor, on exactly what type or what class of device we're talking about. The FDA has three classifications of medical device, class 1, 2, and 3, as we pointed out in our brief. Certainly class 1 devices that talk about certain bandages, certain ointment like Neosporin and stuff like that, do not fall within that type of category. This device, Your Honor, was a class 3 medical device.
Okay, then my second question is, if you don't need a prescription because the doctor physically has it and is giving it to you, okay, you don't have to go to a pharmacy to get it because the doctor has it in his office. I mean, obviously, you're not going to go to a pharmacy and get a a rod that you're using for a surgery. The doctor's going to have it. How does the manufacturer get information to the customer or to the patient?
Very simply, Your Honor, the same way that the drug manufacturers today give information to people by way of television commercials when they're promoting their product. And we've seen countless TV commercials, for instance, these days.
What if the person chooses not to advertise? I mean, you're going to advertise a rod that only a doctor is going to understand how it's used to the general public. There's no requirement to advertise, so he doesn't advertise.
Well, it's very simple. Inside the pamphlet comes with the particular device should be something very similar to what we have when we place devices in automobiles or in any other type of product. It just says,
so you're this saying is that the manufacturer should have an insert and that the doctor then gives the insert to the patient?
Absolutely.
Or the doctor doesn't give the insert. The doctor reads it and says, okay, I've advised you.
Well, then the doctor has done something wrong there. But the manufacturer in this case takes absolutely no steps whatsoever to notify the ultimate consumer, and that's what the lawsuit's all about.
I have a problem with how he ever figures out who his ultimate consumer is. That's where I really fall down on this case, because the doctor is the only one who has contact.
Well, unless
you're going to impose a requirement that every time you use a device, the doctor has to wait, notify the manufacturer, give the manufacturer the address and the phone number of the patient, give the manufacturer an opportunity to call the patient. Is that what you're proposing?
Nothing that extreme, but just somewhat short of that, Your Honor.
How are you going to understand something so complicated as an insert with all those fancy words and explanations and percentages? How do you understand that if you just get an insert from the
Your
doctor,
Honor,
assuming he gives it?
There was nothing fancy about telling Ms. Vaccarello that this drug was only being used on an experimental basis, and that the FDA had specifically, unambiguously prohibited the use of that device and the way it was being used. Had Ms. Vaccarello known that...
Your counsel seems to dispute that strongly.
He does, but that's what the ultimate trier of fact is to determine, Your Honor, and we would never have that opportunity because of the application of this doctrine.
You don't have a good answer for me, basically.
Nevertheless, Your Honor, as I indicated, a pharmacist always knows what drugs are and are not good for the patient. And the devices here in question, the only thing that we had instead of a pharmacist here was a salesman. And what we have with medical devices are salesmen, and what we have with drugs are pharmacists. There's a big difference.
Would you review one more thing for me again?
Certainly.
You answered it, but I wasn't clear on it. When they codified the ethical drug language, how do we know that they specifically excluded medical devices?
Well, very simply because in 2307.71E, ethical medical device is specifically defined under the Ohio Revised Code. Right above that, Your Honor, is 2307.71D, which specifically defines ethical drugs. It doesn't say medical devices and drugs is in one definition. It specifically defines them. And then in 2307.76C, the term ethical drug, as that definition is given to us in 2307.71D, is used not once but three times. So the implication that Smith and Nephew has made that somehow the General Assembly was asleep at the wheel and made a mistake is wrong.
Because your contention would be that they clearly were dealing with both issues, medical devices and ethical drugs, and only included ethical drugs.
Absolutely.
All right, now let me move to the other issue. On page 9 of their brief, they say Vaccarello suggests that Ohio should be the first and only state to reject the application of the doctrine to medical devices. And then in the footnote, as the lower courts correctly noted, every state to consider the issue has applied the learned intermediary doctrine to medical devices. Why shouldn't that be persuasive to us if that's true?
It's perhaps persuasive from a precedential or logical standpoint, but what Smith and Nephew would have this court do is create or recreate, for that matter, Your Honor, 2307.76C, and just have you rewrite the statute for the General Assembly. Now, if they had an argument to make, they should have made it across the street. They didn't.
So in other words, you say our statute may very well be different than all these other...
It may indeed, and if the General Assembly chose it to be so, then they did. And let me also add that prior to the enactment of 2307.76C, not a single case in Ohio law history had ever applied the learned intermediary defense to a medical device as opposed to a prescription device.
Yeah, I understand your argument. Now, let me quickly move to the Bachman case. I know you distinguish it in your brief, but tell me why the U.S. Supreme Court. Is it Bachman versus...
Well, Bachman.
Bachman.
Bachman. Well, ironically, Bachman's another pedicle screw manufacturer, perhaps not too ironically. There, in Bachman, they basically said, the Supreme Court of the United States... And we also take it in context of the Medtronic case, Your Honor, the Lohr versus Medtronic case, that the fraud upon the FDA claims as they exist, or as plaintiff's lawyers contend they exist, do in fact not exist. And that was the thrust of that opinion, nothing else. The Smith and Nephew has attempted to say that that opinion did much more than it did. The lawyers at the plaintiff legal committee that ran all of these pedicle screw cases for a large part nationwide attempted to create a cause of action called fraud upon the FDA.
That's what you say in your reply brief on page 2. The only thing the case of Buckland did was reject the fraud upon the FDA theory as a cause of action.
Correct.
So you say that it really had nothing to do with the issue of whether or not the learned intermediary doctrine should apply to medical devices.
It doesn't even mention the word in the opinion, Your Honor.
Okay. And one last thing, and then I'll let you alone. The statute of limitations. It seems to me if we rule on the statute of limitations, we never get to these issues.
That's correct,
Your
Honor.
What if we held against you on the statute of limitations?
Well, let me...
Is it, first of all, accurate? Yeah, I'll get to it. But is it accurate we don't have to go to the other issues?
I'm misunderstanding you.
If we ruled that your suit was not timely filed.
Yes. Now
have
I understand.
We get to the learned intermediate doctrine. All right.
Fair enough. Yes.
Now why do you say that your suit was timely filed? I recognize the class action suit was filed before that period. But she had what I think we referred to in Alanius or other places as a cognizable event when she saw the TV program.
Understood, Your Honor. Well, that's an excellent question.
And she didn't file it within 2 years of that date.
Excellent question, Your Honor. Let me put it in this way. First of all, if this court is to hold that we do not allow tolling of statute of limitations in connection with class actions, people who get that decision after today know what the law of Ohio is. They are on notice. However, Ms. Vaccarello was relying simply upon the law that existed. That was the Beaver Creek case, American Pipe, and Crown Court. So essentially, she is barred. And the courts in, and I know this court had reviewed the Ohio Hospital Association versus Armstrong case, and in our case, essentially, as we argue in our brief, they have moved the goalposts after the ball is kicked, and nothing could be more unfair to this woman.
We have a case, or I've had a case pending on the cross-jurisdictional tolling issue. Has that case been decided yet?
The Ohio Hospital Association versus Armstrong had oral argument, but...
We don't have the opinion yet, do
you? You don't, because Armstrong went ahead and filed bankruptcy.
Okay, so if we rule in that case that cross-jurisdictional tolling is not permitted, then you're out. If we rule that it is, then you're in.
As it then we go to the next issue. Understood.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that having been said, I have no further comments without any other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. O'Shea. Mr. Murphy.
Your Honors, there are two basic issues before the court that have been already decided. I believe that on the cross-jurisdictional class action tolling issue, this court has heard argument, of course, in the Ohio Hospital Association versus Grace case. But the Howard and Allen decision in that case clearly states that we reserve tolling, in effect, the savings clause for those cases that are filed in Ohio. And we should not let actions in other states and actions in the federal courts of other states control the dockets in the state of Ohio. I'm not going to spend much time on that particular issue because this court has heard a lot of argument in that other case. If were it not for the reorganization of Armstrong and Grace, we probably would have had a decision by the time this case is here for oral argument this morning. But I think the most important case from the standpoint of my client Smith and Nephew is the doctrine of learned intermediary. Counsel suggests that because the statute eliminates any reference in terms of learned intermediary for medical devices, that therefore the learned intermediary doctrine does not apply to medical devices. If the court considers the Correll case, just like Howard, I think, is a threshold case for the statute of limitations, Correll versus Allied is a threshold case for this particular issue. And in Correll, this court stated that in terms of the product liability statute, it didn't abrogate the common law right to bring a negligent design case. And the plaintiffs were entitled to bring their negligent design case because the statute did not expressly prohibit it. And as I looked through the statutes discussed in Correll and the arguments propounded by counsel for the defendant in that case, I found that they were very similar to the statutes at issue in this case. And the fact that this case does not expressly eliminate the learned intermediary doctrine for medical devices is a corollary to the Correll case. But the policy of this court in eliminating learned intermediary to medical devices goes far greater than that.
You would, in order to take advantage of the Correll case, you have as an underlying proposition that the learned intermediary doctrine exists with regard to medical devices existed at common law or exists at common law. That's what Correll case.
That's correct.
Stands for.
The learned intermediary doctrine was adopted in Ohio in the Seeley case, and in the Tracy case, this court broadly discussed learned intermediary doctrine. I think that was in 1991. Both of these predate this particular statute, and discussed the learned intermediary doctrine in terms of prescription or ethical drugs and medical devices. It in fact says drugs, I believe, and products were the exact terms that the Supreme Court used. I don't know if the adoption of the learned intermediary doctrine for prescription medications in 1981 by the Seeley case is in fact a common law, but it certainly is the law of the state much earlier than the adoption of the statutes that we're discussing in terms of the product liability law that was codified in the 90s by the legislature. The important aspect of this is that to change the learned intermediary doctrine in terms of eliminating it from its application to medical devices would totally upset the balance of the way the practice and procedures of handling and delivering medical care and medical devices to patients in the state of Ohio. And as we said in our brief, and Justice Douglas chatted with counsel about, it has never been adopted, it has never been prohibited in another state to this point in time, based on the research that went into this brief. We have never found a case where the learned intermediary doctrine was prohibited in its application to a medical device.
But he says, in reading that, I kind of gleaned that when I read the codification of it. It seems like they had that issue before them, and specifically, not specifically, but certainly impliedly, eliminated medical devices from this consideration, because they give a definition of medical device and only say ethical drugs.
In the that's an interpretation and inferring that the legislature intended to prohibit its application to medical devices because in this second statute, I think that's 76, it only refers to ethical drugs, where in the initial statute that defines the product liability aspects of medical and ethical drugs, it doesn't, it mentions both.
Uh-huh.
I don't think, Justice Douglas, that you can infer, and I don't infer that the legislature even made a mistake. I'm saying the statute does not expressly prohibit the applications.
True.
And that's the important thing, I believe. We can all speculate, and we may have conjectures what they meant across the street, but I think the fact is that it is not in there. It doesn't say that the drug is the medical device. The application of the doctrine of the medical device is prohibited.
Sure looks like they had the issue before them, though. Now, I know you can't infer anything, and the rule is that, but we sometimes look to the prior language to see why wouldn't they have said it? I mean, it was right. It had to be right in front of them.
I have the same quandary when I think about it. I mean, but I still believe that we're dealing more in the area of some conjecture, and we really don't know, and there's no prohibition. I think Correll applies. However, the most important aspect of it is that, and I'll just address what counsel just mentioned a moment ago, I think the pharmacy issue, where you have a prescription drug and you go to the pharmacy to get your Zocor or your arthritis drugs, I think that weighs heavily in favor of the application to prescription devices, because in the drug case, you do have another intermediary. As Justice Stratton explained in her discussion back and forth with counsel, there is nobody between the physician and the patient, and there is no way to get access to the patient. There's access to persons with prescription drugs when they go to the pharmacy, because the pharmacy talks to them about them. These are privileged communications. These are instances that nobody has any ability to access in terms of manufacturing a drug. Do we want a Jarvik heart, or do we want one of the new Brand X hearts? I mean, do we want to use a device to stabilize your spine made by Smith & Nephew, or do we want the Acromed one, or should we use baling wire? Those things involve the practice of medicine in large part. And as a matter of fact, in this case, that's exactly what happened, because Dr. Rosen testified in his deposition as part of the record that he knew the status with the FDA. He knew that this device was the best thing for his patient to stabilize her spine. She had previous surgeries. He did what he thought was best, and he informed her, according to his testimony, of the risks and of the FDA status. And in the record, the information that went to Dr. Rosen from Smith & Nephew concerning the spinal Rogozinski spinal rod system states, caution, the use of vertebral pedicle screw fixation is considered investigational by the USDA. I mean, the doctor knew exactly what he was doing, and every physician knew, and as a matter of fact, the FDA has found, as you know in our brief, that this particular instrument was state-of-the-art medicine in terms of stabilizing spines. And they reclassified these as class two, as a matter of fact. And if the court talks about Buckman, I just want to address that for a moment, because those issues are not record issues. Counsel talks a lot about the FDA status and the problem with the FDA scheme, but they misconstrue totally the FDA approach to regulating these medical devices. In this particular case, An off-label use for a device or a drug that's cleared by the FDA is part of the art of medicine. And if a physician feels it's important and it's something that can be used to heal and cure his particular patient, he has a right to use it as long as he provides the patient with a proper warning and the proper consent is obtained. As a matter of fact, that's why we have a statute requiring the physician to explain 2317-54, to explain all of the risks and benefits and all of the adverse effects of any procedure that is intended to be utilized in the care of the patient. The Buckman case is a very important case because the FDA recognized, and it's mentioned in Buckman, that the lumbar screw fixation was the standard of care. That's what it said in Buckman. Buckman also said that state law fraud on the FDA claims conflict and are preempted by Federal Food and Drug and Cosmetic Act. And the conflict is there because the federal statutory scheme empowers the FDA to punish and deter fraud and against the agency. And Justice Stevens, in his concurring opinion, said the most important and telling thing. He said, this has been going on for quite some time. The FDA has a process and control and authority to move on these issues, and they've never moved against pedicle screws. And they've never done anything on pedicle screws except reclassify them to a lesser risk than number three. And for that reason, he felt compelled in Buckman to find that these actions should not be delegated to the state, so to speak, to say that the FDA, fraud has been committed on the FDA and there's a conflict in terms of what the state should do. What the state might do in terms of the authority of the FDA in controlling these things.
Are you arguing preemption now?
No, but that's
what I haven't found preemption in these.
No, that's what Buckman said, though. The ultimate decision in Buckman versus the plaintiff's legal committee, it went to the issue of whether Mr. O'Shea can even bring an action based on misrepresentations of the FDA in a state court.
That sounds like preemption, doesn't it?
It does sound like preemption to me, but that's, if you read Buckman, that's what the court said.
Why wouldn't you have argued preemption?
Why don't I argue preemption? I don't think it's an issue. The issue in this case is whether the learned intermediary applies and whether there's cross jurisdiction or class action tolling.
If it's preempted.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
You never get to any of those issues if it's preempted. You don't even get started
right on
the statute of limitations issue or the learned doctrine.
I didn't bring that before Judge Stuart Friedman in the trial court. I didn't bring it before Judge Timothy McMonagle and John Patton and James Sweeney in the Court of Appeals, and I didn't feel it was appropriate to bring it here.
I'm just wondering why. Because if you say Bachman and Stevens' concurrence is so persuasive in that regard,
Buckman, Your Honor, didn't come out until 2000. The Supreme Court decision, I think, it was reported, actually, in February 21st of 01. So we didn't have that case before us, and counsel's right, he's a fine plaintiff's advocate, that he keeps bringing in the FDA issues and saying that we committed a fraud in the FDA. Nothing could be farther from the truth. But I went into those issues because it was so... It was mentioned so often in his brief that I didn't want the court to be distracted by something that's really not an issue. We're here to decide if this court should change the law of the state of Ohio regarding cross-jurisdictional class action tolling and whether learned intermediary applies to medical devices. It's as simple as that. And I think that's a non-issue in regards to those other matters. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Mr. O'Shea, you've saved a little over 2 minutes of your time.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor. Let me address first, if I can, Your Honors, the Correll case. As has been pointed out by Justice Cook, there was no common law existence of the learned intermediary defense in the context of medical devices, prior to the statute. So it just doesn't apply at all in this case. The only thing the Seeley case did is apply the learned intermediary defense to prescription drugs. That's it. As a matter of fact, as we recall, the defendant in that case was Merrill Dahl Pharmaceuticals. It was not a medical device manufacturer.
Thereby, the common law acknowledged the concept of learned intermediary, though that case applied it to a prescription drug. I think the argument goes that once it's ensconced in the common law, Carroll holds that the common law is not abrogated or substituted by the enactment of the Products Liability Act.
Understood, Your Honor, but again, the Seeley case only applied it to prescription drugs and had a rationale for making a limited application of the doctrine.
Did it discuss devices? I don't recall that it did.
It did not discuss devices at all.
So didn't it preclude that?
It didn't specifically preclude it. Let me also argue about the Buckman case. The Buckman case, as Buckman indicates, did nothing to the 1996 United States Supreme Court case of Lohr versus Medtronics. And believe me, Ms. Vaccarello does not want to pursue a fraud upon the FDA case. What she is pursuing, Your Honors, is a fraud upon herself. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Got 30 seconds more. If this case, we find the statute of limitations here applies, or the doctrine can be applied to medical devices, is your client still in the class action suit?
She is not. The class action, Your Honor, was denied up in Pennsylvania by Judge Bechtel some 2 or 3 years ago, maybe even longer, 4 years ago.
Yeah, I read that. But I
so she'd be out of luck. She'd have no lawsuit, period, in the end.
Is that case isn't on appeal?
It is not. It was never appealed. What happened in, you know, the epilogue of that story is that the plaintiff's team and the defense got together and in the context, for instance, of Acromed, and they agreed to do a settlement class action, but only with respect to the manufacturer of Acromed, none of the other manufacturers, not Smith & Nephew. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. O'Shea. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. We'll take a brief recess.